Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 347th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your Wild Inventor host, Mason, joined by my Spelling Bee champion co-host, Allie. Allie, how you doing?
We really just had to add that in there.
Yeah, I was going to do a science fair thing, and then you told me before the show that your school didn't do a science fair, and then we talked about a spelling bee, and I said that spelling bee was like science of the words. And so here we are.
It had to be there.
Yeah. It's the only thing that makes sense, you know? Allie, the plan is simple today. Here's what we're doing. We're going to talk about Kaladesh Pick 2 set review. It's not really a set review unless you're a Zoomer, but if you're a Boomer, it's kind of us talking about cards you've already heard about, but in the context of Historic, it's going to be a great episode. Are you excited?
Yeah, I think a lot of people who started playing Arena in the original like beta when it came out were super excited to kind of have all the old cards come back. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
Sure. Yeah, this is awesome. And for some people, like we were saying before the episode, this is just like a brand new set for them, right? Like I know people who like I was watching them stream yesterday and just like, I don't know a Kaladesh card. Like I haven't looked at the set thing yet. And so this is, you know, if you're a newer player, a really exciting time. This set is really strong, we promise. So
yeah, if you played during Kaladesh, at least in Standard, you know how powerful this set was, especially compared to the sets around it. So I think a lot of these cards are going to be played in Historic, so I'm excited to talk about them today.
For sure. Before we go forward, though, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/GCMTG. We're not doing a Patreon question this week because we're going to do this set review. We're going to talk about all these cards. But normally this is where we would do that. It's one of the perks of being a patron there. And you can always check out our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can go to oasisgames.com right now. Use code CCMTG at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And use code WOULDTHATBEGOOD for 4% off every order. Then you can pick up your Kaladesh cards that they have in stock there. And so when Historic paper events come out, you're ready. That's how good Kaladesh is, Allie. Bam.
Perfect.
You'll love to hear it. Alrighty then, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. So since this is a set that has already kind of been out before, it was a little bit harder to do one of some of our speculatory categories or something where it's like, oh, we don't really know, da-da-da-da-da. And so instead, we're only doing four categories today instead of our usual five. We have Sleeper, Favorite Returning, Hopeful, and Hit. So, Allie, would you like to start us off with your first Sleeper?
Sure. It's not as exciting as yours, but my first Sleeper is Disallow. Let me scroll.
I'm not gonna allow for you to look for that card's text.
Okay, it's one blue instant counter target spell, activated ability or triggered ability. And I think this is just kind of the three mana blue counter spell that nothing has kind of compared to it since its release. And if we look at Historic, there's like a divide between people playing Sinister Sabotage or Neutralize or Absorb, and they're all just like not as good as Disallow. So I think it's a sleeper just because it's not like big and flashy or anything, but I think it's a strict upgrade to every three mana counterspell in the format.
You say it's not big or flashy, Allie, but let me give you some hits that you can do with it for the people at home who maybe don't understand like what counting an ability could mean or a triggered ability. You can counter the Yorion Return, right? So if your opponent plays a Yorion and blinks their board, you'll make it so it doesn't come back, right? You can stifle whatever, like counter your Uro trigger. You can counter your Pact Negation. So like if you needed to pact or whatever, you could counter the... So you basically made three instead of five, excuse me. That's just like a couple things that come to mind. Wow, I'm dying. The government's trying to prevent me from talking about the amazing card Disallow. They don't want the truth to be out there, Ellie.
That's why it's a sleeper.
For sure, yeah. I'm the Edward Snowden of MTG, let me tell you what. But yeah, that's just like a couple examples that come off the top of my head. And there's a bunch of small little things. This also, one of the things I think that gets forgotten is that like Planeswalker abilities can get countered with this card a lot. So like if your opponent's going to like ultimate, like an Ugin or minus an Ugin, or like, you know, maybe they're trying
or
to use a
Chandra Torch of Defiance that's also in here.
Yeah, just any of those abilities you can stop with this card, which I think is huge. You know, like that is like the difference in between it being just a cancel variant, right? It's like all of those added abilities that happen. Marvel activations too, you know, so. Yeah, this law's dope. I'm happy to see it. Allie, I'm going to let you do your second sleeper card right now. Are you ready?
Go. I wasn't ready.
You weren't ready? Oh, no. Well, then instead of having to edit this later, I'm just going to talk about my card and let you pick up your card. And that's Scrap Heap Scrounger. I haven't seen anyone talk about this card in Historic, even though it dominated Standard and like sees a lot of Pelion Pioneer. Scrap Heap Scrounger is 2 generic mana for a 3/2 artifact creature that has the text of cannot block. And 1 in a black, exile another creature card from your graveyard, or return Scrap Heap Scrounger to the battlefield. So Scrap Heap Scrounger is very, very good in black-based aggressive decks. Typically, it shines in decks that like use multiple colors of mana, since it's a good colorless 2-drop that in the late game just needs black. So if you don't have black in the early game consistently, it's not that big a deal for this card. And the 3/2 body is just nice. It will normally just trade off with a lot of the stuff your opponents play in the early game if you're able to put them on the back foot, and then in the late game buy it back, and very good against control decks. You know, having a creature that comes back from the graveyard is a nice one after they Wrath of God you.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to put this one in the hit category for sure, but I found 2 others that I like as well. And you already had it, so we can talk about Scrap Heap Scrounger now. I think this set has really added a lot of good cards that can help aggressive decks in general, which haven't been super popular in Historic outside of a person like here or there playing either mono red or Gruul. But I think there's a lot of additions like Scrap Heap Scrounger that can go in, I guess, any aggressive deck or mono black, which mono black aggro is kind of been like fringe, like tier 2, maybe tier 3 for a while, and maybe this gives a push to actually help fight some of the things that were kind of keeping it down.
Yeah, mono black aggro is a deck that's like throughout like the history of Pioneer, which is, you know, a similarish format, has been a very prevalent deck, and this has been one of the key pieces that we've been missing. It's just that 2-drop that, you know, can buy back in the early game and give us a use for our cards and be okay with Wrath happening to us. So I'm happy to see it. I'm excited to see if it plays out. It's weird, right? Because in Historic, we have so many powerful threats, but all the threats are like these mid-game unbeatable cards, like Nissa and Uro and, you know, things like that, or like Cat Oven Devil, right? Like that's like an unbeatable thing for a lot of aggressive decks. And so I'm curious to see if aggro will push through in this set, because there's a lot of really good early mana cards in this set. Not only just mana, but we're going to talk about it later, just the lands are really, really good in this set. So I think it's possible that aggressive decks finally have their chance to really shine outside of Gruul. Like, I think Gruul has been the only aggressive deck, except for mono red here and there, like you said, that has really had a chance. Basically, Embercleave decks have been the only way to play aggressive decks in Historic for the most part. So, interesting. All right, Allie, what's your second sleeper?
My second sleeper is Aether Sphere Harvester. It's 3 generic mana flying. When Aether Sphere Harvester enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy. You can pay 1 energy, and Aether Sphere Harvester gains lifelink until end of turn, and it has crew 1 because it's a vehicle. It's a 3/5. I hate reading these cards. There's too much text, but I think I really like this card because in Standard, it felt like it was a sideboard card in almost every deck, so it feels like it's really impactful. And I think it's hard to have a card that's like meaningfully good as a sideboard card against aggressive decks, we're starting to see some more cards that are meaningfully good against aggressive decks being printed in standard. Like, I think Elder Gargaroth is, but a lot in the past was like, oh, we can play like Life Goes On and gain 8 life, but that's not, that doesn't like impact the board in any meaningful way. Where Aethersphere Harvester, I think, does, and can kind of just be put in any deck if you're worried about aggro. It can even be put in the aggro deck for the mirror. So I am a huge fan of this card. I think it's very underrated.
Yeah, I big agree. The only thing I want to add is, we, in case you don't know what energy is the new mechanic in Kaladesh that is a resource that is like outside the game, that's like a counter that gets kept tracked. And cards produce energy, and they use energy as like a substitute or an addition to mana. So like a card that might be like a Attune with Aether, it's just like one in a green, go get a basic land from your deck and put in your hand, get 2 energy. So it like gets you a land and gets you some energy, and then you use energy for things like Aethersphere Harvester to power them on. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. Aethersphere Harvester, great card. You'll love to see it. Do you have anything else you want to say about Aethersphere Harvester? I think that card's really cool, but it kind of, you kind of nailed it.
No, I think that's the main points. I think I just want to drive home again that it's not, or it's only generic mana, so it can be played in all these decks, which I think is extra powerful, especially when we're looking at, like, most decks in Historic right now have at least a 1/1 creature, so you could literally play this in almost every deck in Historic.
That's very true. We also didn't play with this card with Llanowar Elves before, which I think is a pretty big get for the green deck. Oh, actually, you know what? We did. There was the last bit with Dominaria, and it was really good, right? That's back when Mono Green was strong. But yeah, we have seen that this card in Llanowar Elves is strong, and I expect that to hold true. it's messed up. My last sleeper is Saram. So Saram is 1W for a legendary artificer. I can't really read that part. Either way, when a equipment, aura, or vehicle enters the battlefield, draw 1 card. It's a 2/2. So this is like the core Spirit Dancer of Kaladesh or whatever. You know, it's got the vehicle text. And this card has proven to be surprisingly good. You know, if you've ever played with core Spirit Dancer, that card's very impressive. And part of the reason it's impressive is that it turns all the auras and stuff that you put on it by +2/+2 more. But having another copy of that card really makes these aura decks a lot stronger. You know, the difference between having a Spirit Dancer draw and not is a really, really noticeable thing in the deck. And being able to play 6 to 8 of these, if you know that you think Saram's that important, is going to be a huge boon for these aggressive aura decks. And we've seen, once again, that in Pioneer, when they don't have Spirit Dancer, but they do have Saram. And there's a black-white auras deck that's pretty good over there. And the two key missing pieces that we had in there that we didn't have here was the black-white Fastland, which we got the set, and we got Saram. And so I think it's possible that we could have a brand new auras archetype pop up in our hands where you play Thoughtseize instead of Counterspells, and you kind of just go all in with Saram and Spirit Dancers, and you just try and pop off on people. So that's exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm not excited for this card at all. I hate these kind of decks so much.
You don't like wearing pants? You don't like
the pants decks? No, I hate pants. I hate Cheerios. I hate everything that this card enables. But you know what? I'm happy you're happy.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun time. Think about all the complaining equity you get on stream about Saram. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I just don't want to deal with it. I don't know.
Well, just kill it. I don't know. It dies to Doomblade, Allie. How hard can it be? We have Fatal Push now. All right. Well, Allie, I guess we'll move on to favorites, and we'll snake draft it here. And this is one of my favorite cards of all time, and we get to talk about it on the podcast right now. Are you excited? Spencer Highland's rolling over in his grave. It's Hidden Stockpile, 1W enchantment. It has the ability Revolt. So Revolt says if a permanent leaves the battlefield this turn. If you trigger Revolt, you get a 1/1 servo token at the end of your turn. And you can pay 1 and sacrifice a creature. If you do, scry 1. That's it. That's the card. Before I go in, Allie, what are your thoughts on hidden stockpile? Because I'm about to stand hard for the stockpile.
You are going to need to tell me why you love this card so much.
Awesome. So, Anointed Procession is also in Historic. That is 3 and a white. When a token enters the battlefield, you double it. So what you do is you play a black-white, like, token-y control deck where your goal is to, like, trigger a revolt every turn by having something die. So, like, or having something leave the battlefield. So you can play fetch lands and renegade map, and this stockpile, once you have a couple pieces going, actually enables it. If you have Anointed Procession, you're up a token each turn. Not a whole lot there when it comes to that sort of thing, but you do that sort of thing as a way to overwhelm your opponents, and I don't think that this is strong enough to win in Historic right now. We have too many decks that go way over the top, but if they ever ban those decks, this could be a really fun time that could actually succeed. And either way, it's just a really fun time to do that. You play cards like Anointed Priest from Amaket, which, like, when a token enters the battlefield, you gain a life, and it has Embalm. So if you get that plus Anointed Procession, you're normally gaining a bunch of life, and you basically invalidate any sort of aggro or creature-based midrange deck. And that's the whole spiel on the card. It's honestly one of my favorite cards to play with. It's so innocuous and just completely crushes your opponent. And it has a lot of weird cards that work with it now. Like, we didn't have Fabled Passage back then. We had to use Evolving Wilds. We didn't have Yorgon that could blink some of our stuff. We didn't have Lurrus to buy stuff back. We didn't have Alcied to protect our combo pieces in the form of Stockpile and Anointed Procession. So I'm really excited to play with this deck. I don't expect it to be winning any events, but it's just a good time.
Make a 1/1.
Go. I bet you if Uro decks don't have Ugin, I can easily beat an Uro deck. Like, that is the sort of deck that you destroy with this deck. Like, not close. Not close. No cap on God. All right.
Keep going.
What's your favorite card of the set? I can talk about Hidden Stockpile all day. My first 5-0 on MTGO was Hidden Stockpile, and Ross Merriam played it on SCG. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah. Jeopardy Zone. All right. What's your first favorite?
My first one is... maybe not necessarily a card I expect to see a ton of play, but I just love Combustible Gearhulk, which is a 4 red-red artifact creature construct. This first strike, when Combustible Gearhulk enters the battlefield, target opponent may have you draw 3 cards. If that player doesn't, you mill 3 cards, then Combustible Gearhulk deals damage to that player equal to the total CMC of those cards. And it's a 6/6. I don't, like, not see this be playable in some kind of, like, Gruul or Team or Ramp deck. I think that could be really cool. Especially just with, like, how much ramp stuff we have in Historic anyway. That's just cool. If they don't let you draw the cards, maybe you just flip, like, 3 Ugins and then they die.
Allison Meebo Warfield, you're going to tell me that Combustible Gearhulk gets you excited, but the idea of Hidden Stockpile gets nothing. Make a 1/1.
You
get
to either draw cards or kill your opponent. It's great and it's random.
Allie, you always draw servos with Hidden Stockpile and you always win. It's amazing.
you could find a way to manipulate the top of your library so you know there's going to be an Ugin on top, and then play the Gearhulk.
Riddle Lightning? Is that Riddle Form Lightning? That's it. That was the combo, right?
I have no idea.
Riddle Form Lightning is like 5, deal 5, scry 5 or something stupid like that. So you would, like, set up your Combustible Gearhulk, I believe was, like, the meme that people did.
I love memes.
Yeah, memes are great. Kind of like my life. Anyways, my next favorite card is Chandra, Torture Defiance. This one's way better than the last 2 cards we talked about. Chandra, Torture Defiance is 2 red-red for a Chandra Planeswalker. She comes in with 4 loyalty. She has +1, make 2 red mana, +1, exile the top card of your deck. If it is a non-land card, you may cast that card this turn. If you choose not to cast this card this turn, deal 2 damage to target opponent. And then it has -3. Deal 4 damage to target creature, and then has -7. You get an emblem whenever you cast a spell. Chandra, Torture Defiance deals 5 damage to any permanent you want, or any target you want. So Chandra is kind of like one of the more oppressive planeswalkers. If you're an arena zoomer, this sounds probably like a strong planeswalker to you because you have like the War of the Spark and Eldraine era. But before that, this was probably the most messed up planeswalker since like the Jace the Mind Sculptor era, like in Liliana the Veil. Would you say that's true, Allie?
Yeah, I like Chandra so much. I put her as a hit for this this podcast episode. I'm a big Chandra fan. I think she's very good. I think she'll definitely play in Historic.
Yeah. So I'm going to save talking too much about Chandra right now, since we're going to talk about the hit. We can kind of really go in on where it's going to see play in Historic later. But just know, if you listen to that and you're like, oh, that doesn't sound so great, that card is very good. It is very impressive when you play with it, even against like the decks that worked, like against the other planeswalkers we're talking about, like Teferi, Time Ravel, Oka. Like, Chandra holds a torch to them. So, Allie, what's your next favorite card?
Oh, my next one is Rashmi, Eternity's Crafter, which is 2 green and a blue, legendary elf druid. Whenever you cast your first spell each turn, reveal the top card of your library, and you may cast it without paying its mana cost if it's a spell with lesser CMC. If you don't, put it in your hand. The 2/3. Again, another card that is just kind of fun, and I love Rashmi so much. Don't know if she'll see any meaningful play, but I don't know. I just love my like ramp strategies into like cheating things into play. So if we're not doing a ramp into Combustible Gearhulk, we can ramp with Rashmi and then play Ugin and flip into something else. It'll be fun, don't worry.
Okay, sick. Allie likes to pull the slot machine. She just like pulls
it's
the lever.
It's so much fun. That's why I liked Hearthstone, because it like generated RNG randomness, like steal a card from your opponent's deck.
Don't use H word in this house.
I love Rashmi. I love Gonti. I love randomness and chaos, Mason.
Nice. Feeling a little chaotic today, I see. Well, that's good. I can't believe you don't love Hidden Stockpile if you love randomness. Like, what will your record be? 3-5, 2-6? Who knows?
Allie, make like, a 1/1.
Pass the tier list to your first hopeful.
My first hopeful is Paradoxial Outcome. It's 3 and a blue instant. Return any number of target non-land, non-token permanents you control to their owner's hands. Draw a card for each card returned to your hand this way. I really kind of hope there's a Storm deck in Historic, even though that is like so completely not the kind of deck I love like to play. For some reason, Paradoxial Outcome is the coolest thing ever, and yeah, I could see this like maybe fitting into like a Kethis deck or just creating a new deck altogether, because we have like remnants of what was kind of in standard for a while. There was like a mono blue storm deck. We have Psy. We have the 50 life thing.
Aetherflux Reservoir.
Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm. So very very hopeful for that. We have Mox Amber. We're just ready to go.
That's so true. I have Aetherflux Reservoir in my hopeful, so I'll probably talk about it right now, since I think these cards go hand in hand, or at least typically do. Aetherflux Reservoir is a 4-mana artifact that has, whenever you cast a spell this turn, gain 1 life for each spell cast this turn. So if you cast 1, you get 1, 2, you get 2, 3, you get 3, you get the idea. Then you can pay 50 life to deal 50 damage to any target you want. So normally you choose the opponent's face, and bam, they die. So you cast a bunch of things, and it's your storm payoff. And typically what happens is you Paradoxical Outcome, you pick up a bunch of cheap stuff, you replay the cheap stuff, your Aetherflux Reservoir gains you a bunch of life, and you pew-pew, and then they die. That's the idea. And I think there is a chance for this to be a thing in Historic. There are a lot of cards. We have a lot of mana rocks in the set, and we've seen that Eldrazi Monument is very good at making like the colorless mana like really matter. So I think between this, Aetherflux Reservoir, and that, we can produce a whole lot of mana, pick up a whole lot of cards with our Paradoxical Outcome, and replay them. And then there are things like Paradox Engine there in this set that didn't make our list, but Paradox Engine is 5 mana for an artifact. When you play a spell, untap all your non-land permanents. So that with Mana Rocks is very good, the Paradoxical Outcome. And you get to play that card by playing Karn in your deck, which you already want to do for having like extra Aetherflux as Reservoir. So while like maybe not your main game plan, it does give you like a backup, like, hey, I've got like this Splinter Twin-esque thing where like every time I play a spell, I net 3 mana and I Paradoxical Outcome and I have like 20 mana and I replay them all and then, you know, blah, 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 you die. So, yeah, I think there is like a real chance for that. It's funny because I think if you just put these cards from Kaladesh into Historic, the chance is very high this deck is good. But I think there are a lot of aggressive base cards in Kaladesh that make it less likely for this sort of thing to succeed, just because like you can actually like get into the board more early with more decks. So it's kind of funny how it's suffering from its own set. But yeah, you know, that's the way it happens sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
Allie, you ready to have to wait 30 minutes on Arena while your opponent combos off?
I might be an adult and concede.
Never in my life. what's your
deck? We also have like Thassa's Oracle. We can just like draw our deck and then play Thassa's Oracle.
That's true. Yeah. That works too. You win the game. You get to block early too. You can pick up the Thassa's Oracle with the Paradoxical Outcome.
Yeah, so there you go. Just keep doing it.
Use Nyx Lotus. Use like the Mono Blue Devotion deck. That's actually a totally different way to play the outcome. That's probably reasonable-ish. You love to see it. Allie, what's your next hopeful since I talked about Aetherflux Reservoir?
My next hopeful is Glint Sleeve Siphoner. I love this card so much. This was one of my favorite cards in the standard. It's one and a black creature, human rogue. Another human for our humans lovers. Menace, whenever Glint Sleeve Siphoner enters the battlefield or attacks, you get an energy. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you may pay 2 energy. If you do, you draw a card and lose life. It's a 2/1. So it's compared to Dark Confidant in Standard. This card is just very cool. It has a little bit of evasion with Menace, so you're able to actually attack in a lot of circumstances to get your energy to kind of just like let it do its thing in its upkeep the following turn. Or you can play it in an energy deck. You already have the energy. I don't know. I just really like this card. I think this is another card that can slot well in quite a few decks, that being like a new energy deck, that being mono black aggro, that being something that like Grixis. This is a card that like Grixis has really been missing too. I know you've seen me stream Grixis bad stuff for a while.
Yeah, my eyes have suffered the fate.
I have like a 70% win rate. Calm down.
Let me have Hidden Stockpile. You have Nicol Bolas. Make your choices. I'm gonna have like a 7% win rate with Hidden Stockpile. Why are you tearing me down? What's that? Sorry, keep going. That's a rogue, Allie. What about rogues? We have all these new rogue cards. It does like not rogues. Work with a lot of the other rogue stuff. That's true. But oh, you don't like rogues in Historic either?
Don't like any.
Yeah, no doubt. I hate rogues too. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I hate them. They're the worst. Not me.
I forgot this was a humans too, though. Like this is another card that can kind of fill some holes in the humans deck people are trying.
Yeah. What do you have? I have not seen the humans deck in like 3 or 4 months. Has it changed much? Do you know?
I think it's shifting to just an Esper deck.
Well, sounds good.
I don't really know how many new like innovations it has. It has the what is it? The not quite Sailfruit Booter, the party one. Oh, which you discard.
Yeah, the something Explorer or something like that.
Yeah.
So, the 1/2 that discards a card for party. Where they reveal cards and then you pick them equal to number of parties, so.
Yeah, so other than that it's kind of just been what it has been for a while, but this could be a meaningful addition to that deck.
Yeah, for sure. I this card is really good when it gets going. I've played a lot of this card in its day. It was one of the few like cards in Archetype that wasn't red black Chain Whirler back there, so like blue black Sewer that autumn. and I kind of popularized an autumn one UK Nationals with. I played that deck a lot, missed playing for the Pro Tour with this sort of card. So I have a lot of fond memories when it comes to Glintstone Siphoner. So I'm excited to re-queue up with this one. And I think at worst, for your like black decks, it is a reasonable sideboard card. It was like a pivot plan. You know, like if your opponent's trying to bring in a bunch of negates or something against your deck, this is a great card to punish that sort of strategy. So hopefully we'll see a bunch of Glintstone Siphoner. All right.
I love this card.
My next hopeful is Toolcraft Exemplar. It's one white for a dwarf 1/1, artificer as well, sorry, that has, if you control an artifact at the beginning of combat, it gets +2/+1, and if you have three artifacts in play, it gets first strike. So it becomes a 3/2, and Toolcraft Exemplar is just like the marquee white aggro artifact card that there has been a lot of white based and white adjacent aggro decks on the fringes of historic, like low tier three stuff, but they've really missed the ability to play another color to have like good and powerful cards and more early one drops that are impactful. You don't really want stuff like Gingerbread on turn one, but because of your synergies, you have to play it. And so you kind of lack like those early plays that can get the ball really going for you. And I think with this Scrap Heap Scrounger and the great mana we got from this set, there's a chance that this deck has a real shot at being a player. And we saw Toolcraft Exemplar be a mainstay in the standard format that it was in. I actually just realized that we both didn't mention Heart of Kirin in our list, as I was about to mention, see if we'd done it. But Heart of Kirin is a vehicle that's a 2-drop 4/4 with crew 3. And just has Vigilance, and you can crew with Planeswalker Loyalty as well. But just those sort of, that package of cards, along with Bomak Courage, we'll talk about soon, give your artifact aggro decks a real shot in the early game and a real chance to put pressure on your opponent, and then use your powerful cards like Tempered Steel, or maybe Steel Overseer, or even just Venerated Loxodon is a strong card in those sort of decks, and that can help, you know, push through those last point of damages.
So. Mardu Vehicles.
Beep, beep. Yeah, I don't know if we have Mardu Vehicles in like the traditional grindy sense that we did before, but I do think there is like, because of the red-white fastland, the black-white fastland, Aether Hub, and Spire of Industry, you can like actually play multiple Spires in this format because you don't have like colored spells in the early game, but you do have like Embercleave, all that glitter, and Lessened Disintegration, and you get to play all of those cards, and those cards are all really strong. So, you know, all your sources enter untapped too for the first three turns and like don't really cost you life except for like the couple shock lands. So
yeah, for sure.
I think there's a shot. I don't know. It's hard to overpower Uro, but maybe this sort of thing, if you're on the play, can like push them back enough, and then maybe post board you have some cages. I don't know. I haven't got that far in the process yet, but hey, historic SCG next week. So maybe we're going to have, you know, a bunch more historic talk coming up.
I'm very excited.
Yep. Well, let's move on to our hits. These are the cards that we think are going to completely hit in Historic and be mainstay players. My first hit is Bomak Courier, which I just alluded to. Bomak Courier is a artifact creature that is one generic mana. It has haste, and when you attack, you exile a card underneath Bomak Courier because it is the worst designed Magic card in history for paper play. And then you pay red and discard your hand and put all the cards exiled underneath Bomak Courier into your hand, which if you ever played in paper is just a logistical nightmare.
I remember playing this. This was like when I played the red deck in standard. This was like one of my favorite red decks in standard, minus Experimental Frenzy. That was a good one. But yeah, I remember just trying to very neatly put cards under the Bomak Courier and not look at them and not tip them over, or have the opponent see them, or knock my library over. It was a whole thing.
What about second Bomak Courier? What about that one?
that one was allowed to cause problems on purpose.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, the fact that card doesn't have a charge counter, and then when you sacrifice it, you draw cards equal to the charge counters off the top of your deck, blows my mind. It drives me crazy. Anyways, let's talk about the actual card design. Bomak Courier, as Ali just mentioned, is really, really good in these aggressive decks. You play it early, It's very easy on the mana. So if you're having like a multicolor deck, or maybe, you know, you have just the need for a red one drop, this is much better than cards like Fanatical Firebrand. And in the early game, really forces your opponent to answer it. And as a 1/1, it gets outscaled pretty quickly. And if they don't answer it, you're really looking to just deploy your whole hand very quickly and then draw a brand new one. You know, just even 3 or 4 cards is enough for these red decks to typically kill the opponent. So I'm very excited to play with Bomat Courier. And the fact it's an artifact turns on cards like Toolcraft Exemplar for more fringe shenanigan things. Do you have any more thoughts on Bomat Courier, Allie, before we move on?
I just love Bomat Courier. I'm very excited that the red deck kind of gets to transform into what it was before.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. The red deck's getting really strong. We didn't mention Karizev in this either, but this also shows how strong the set is, that there are a bunch of cards we're just not mentioning that are insanely powerful. But like, Karizev is a 2-mana 1/3 that when it attacks, you make a Raghavan token, which is a 2/1. But what that really means is that you can consistently turn 3 an Embercleave now, because your 2-drop counts as 2 bodies when you're attacking. And I think that plus Bomat Courier, plus the stuff we already have, and like Burning Tree Emissary is like, yo, red decks get to Embercleave on 3 consistently, and that is powerful. That is like...
Love that.
Yeah, it's going to be sick.
Karizev is a very good card, too.
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy. We're not going to mention a Winding Constrictor on this list, in case you were curious. Like, there are just so many cards we didn't mention. Metallic Mimic, there are just a lot of really strong cards. Allie, what's your first hit, now that we've mentioned a bunch of cards that people love that we're not going to talk about?
I mean, we already touched on Chandra, Torch of Defiance, but we can start to dig into, like, what decks it'll... or she'll get played in. I love Chandra because she just kind of fits. She's another card that fits into a bunch of different archetypes. Like, she can fit into an aggressive red sideboard. She can fit into just a medium red main deck or a big red main deck. She can fit into Grixis, bad stuff. She can fit into Gruul. She can fit into, like, Grueler teamer ramp deck. She kind of just has a spot everywhere because she's so versatile with all of her different things she can do. I love this card.
Yeah, Chandra, very, very, very good. And really good in the red decks too, you know? Like, those aggressive base decks really like to have this card advantage / shock engine that they have access to. So, do you think this kind of card is going to see play in the Grixis decks? The Grixis pile of cards that you love?
Yeah, I mean, I think she can. I think there's kind of a hole in that deck of 4-drops if you're not me and playing Gonti for no reason. Kind of have, like, the shift to be more favored towards red, which might be awkward on the mana base, but we also get more lands. There's more lands in this set.
Yeah, the lands are really good. We're going to get to those very soon. I guess the next card we should talk about is another hit, and this is Fatal Push. Fatal Push is a black for an instant. Destroy target creature, 2 CMC or less, and then has Revolt, which is the ability we talked about earlier. If something leaves the battlefield this turn, you can destroy a creature with 4 CMC or less. Fatal Push is one of the best removal spells of all time and really puts a lot of pressure on your 2-drops and lower to be good. And puts a good amount of pressure on your 4-drops and lower being good. So Fatal Push is one of those cards that defines a format. And we mentioned for a long time on this podcast that Historic, one of its defining features is that it lacks good early game interaction. And this is good early game interaction.
Yeah, maybe this take is like slightly too hot, but I think Fatal Push is probably the most impactful card printed in the set.
I think it's absurd. I think that's just true. Like, if it's not true, it's because there's some weird synergy thing that everyone's missing that we'll figure out after 3 or 4 days of Arena. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
yeah, if it's not true, then it's just like, oh, Aetherworks Marvel or like Pia or like some other thing is just like actually busted.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if we put a bunch of Winding Constrictor effects and counter cards, we figured it out, you know? Something that's like weird that you think you could beat, but you can't. I think Fatal Push, like Allie said, is probably going to define the set the most. You wouldn't think that having one removal spell in a format would change the way 2-drops and lower play, but it really asks a lot of your two drops. Like, they need to be good. They need to impact the battlefield some way or work towards something or be recursive, because they will just die a fair bit of the time. And, you know, decks like that Bolas deck that Ali can't stop playing would love to have Fatal Push. That way they can actually make it to turn four without dying. What time to be alive.
Wow.
Ali, what is your the last hit, I should say, of the Pick 2 set review?
I put down Aetherworks Marvel.
I can't talk read. A little.
Aetherworks Marvel. It's a 4 generic mana, legendary artifact. Whenever a permanent you control is put in the graveyard, you get an energy, and then you can tap and pay 6 energy and look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may cast a spell from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So obviously this card was very powerful in the standard that it was legal in. If you don't know, it ended up being banned in standard eventually, because you would just spin Marvel into a free Ulamog, which, oh look, that's in historic too. So I really don't think it's going to be oppressive. We've looked at Pioneer, which has a slightly bigger like card pool than historic, and obviously like the formats are still pretty different, but it really hasn't done anything in Pioneer, which makes me believe that there's efficient enough answers to kind of mitigate that. But I still think that this will be a strategy, especially week one. I think everyone's gonna try and get their hands on a good Marvel deck list, so
yeah,
it's a hit.
Graftigger's Cage continues to be the best sideboard card in historic by a lot, as it stops this card, you know, completely in its track. That being said, I think I'm a little higher on Marvel. Like, I agree that it, like, the gold rush tomorrow at the time of this recording is going to be get a Marvel deck online, you know, and, like, break it or whatever. But I think one of the defining features of the other older formats like Pioneer that Historic doesn't have, at least currently, is that the games last until about turn 6 or 7 on average. And I feel like the other ones last till turn 4 or 5. And I think 6 or 7 is a big difference when you're playing Marvel, because that's, like, another spin or two. You're getting an Ulamog, we're getting an Ugin, or... We didn't mention this, but, like, you get to play the Zendikar double face land cards as lands, and if you hit them off Marvel, you get to cast them. So the green one lets you find your Ulamog again, right? So now you have a lot of hits at Ulamog. And then the blue
okay,
one lets
hear
you
me
draw
out.
Cards. Hear me out. I'm here.
Hear me out. We play Aetherworks Marvel in Jund Sacrifice because you get a ton of energy.
That could be... So you use Cat Oven Marvel, and then that gets you 2 energy, sorry, on the loop. Right? Yeah, maybe they might have something to that. For sure.
Perfect. Or just like a Marvel deck with Cat Oven, I guess.
Yeah, that could be.
And then you spin into another cat.
For sure, yeah. I think that could totally happen as birthday boy Eggroll, my dog, walks in. He's turned 16 today. Shout out to you, Eggroll. Yeah, I think that could be good. I also think that you can maybe play I mentioned the blue and the green double face cards. The white one's also really good. So if you have, like, we haven't seen white based Marvel decks in the past, but maybe that's something that with, you know, the new spells we have in historic compared to other older formats, that might be something that could be played. And, you know, getting 2 4/4s on turn 4 is really strong. So that could be something. And yeah, who knows? There's a lot of a lot of things you can do with Marvel, like hitting Hornet Queen off Marvel is really strong. Even just like generating incidental value, right? Like you play Marvel on 4 and you hit, let's say, Nissa Who Shakes the World, right? That's really strong. And we should probably mention too, because we kind of alluded to it, there are enough good energy enablers throughout the set at like the common and uncommon rarity that are playable that enable you to consistently kind of turn 4 this and like spin with it. So we didn't really talk about those cards because there's a lot of them, and you'll figure them out pretty quickly. The people are going to talk about them. So if you haven't played with this card before, it is very reliable to get at least one spin off the Marvel. So, yeah, I think it's going to be strong. I don't know. I might be overestimating it a bit, but who knows? I guess everyone having Graftigger's Cage to their sideboard is definitely going to hurt, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think it'll be good, but I know some people are like, oh, like, let's just not print it or let's ban it or whatever. And I don't think it's at that level.
It's funny. You know, do you remember what they said about Marvel when they banned it in Standard?
What?
They said that its win rate was actually bad. And so the perception from the community was Marvel was the best stack and you're dumb to not play it. It beats everything. But they showed us the win rate data on Modo for like one of the few times ever. And it had no good matchups against other good decks. Like it was just like 40, like sub 40, like 45, 49%, like that sort of thing against like every deck. It just wasn't there. But what happened is everyone remembered that you would spin up Marvel and hit Ulamog. And so they banned it for play pattern reasons. That the people didn't enjoy that. So I'm curious to see if this sort of thing happens again.
Yeah, I mean, that's like banning Inverter and Pioneer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rest in peace, Inverter. Now you have upsell spells.
But yeah. Side tangent. Obviously, I'm a competitive player, and they're not going to like cater to that specific audience, but I dislike banning cards because a subset of people don't like playing it if it's, like, actually fine for the format.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a hard line to walk, because every card is that to somebody, right? It's like,
But obviously, if enough people aren't playing the game, like, they don't really have a choice. Like, they need people to play the game to make money, so.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, I agree.
I just hate it.
No, that's fair. You're allowed to hate it. That's what we have a podcast for. Before we go, though, we did want to give a shout-out to all the lands in this set. There are the five fast lands, which enter the battlefield untap if you control three or less other lands. So there's a blue-green one, black-white one, red-white one, blue-red one, and a black-green one. So all of those color archetypes, I think, get a really big push in Historic when it comes to like your untapped mana bases and playing aggro decks that require multiple colors. They're going to see a lot more play. We also got Aether Hub, which is a land that makes a colorless, but you can spend an energy in order to make any color mana you want. So I think that sort of thing is going to be really strong in decks that are like don't require a lot of pips in the late game, but maybe early game you want to have access to cast a variety of early drops. And then finally, Spire of Industry. It is colorless if you tap it, but if you control an artifact, you can pay a life and make any color mana. So for artifact-based decks, that's really, really strong. So, yeah, I think all those cards are going to see a lot of play and really help change the format up a lot. What do you think, Ellie?
Yeah, I think all the lands are really great. You made the broad statement that all of the lands are you wanted to shout out, so I tried to find a land that wasn't actually that good, but I think they're all really good.
Yeah, the worst one in the set is Basic Plains.
I guess, like, Spire of Industry could be, like, a little... I don't know. It's a five-color land if you have any artifact, though.
Yeah, like and we
yeah,
also...
Yeah, all these cards are very good.
Yeah. I just think a huge problem with the Historic aggro decks has been... And we talked about this before, right? Is that, like, shock lands are good, and check lands are pretty good. But sometimes you draw too many check lands at the start, or you have some basics, and you just can't curve out with your, like, demanding multicolor deck, right? But with this sort of thing... If you demand, like, only white as your early game color, right? But then you play cards like Unlicensed, Embercleave, that sort of stuff for the mid to late game. It won't really matter as long as you just don't draw too many of the same one land because you're going to be able to cast your early spells, get on the board, which you need to do as an aggro deck because you're sacrificing card quality for this early tempo and pressure. And then, boom, you hit them with an Unlicensed. You hit them with an Embercleave. And Spire of Industry, like, I will gladly have it, you know, deal me three or four damage if it means winning the game. So... I think these things are really strong. And Historic just has kind of lacked that option. And other formats do have good early mana, so. Now we've got to see if our threats are good enough when we cast them on curve every time. Which, I don't know if they are against Uro, but that's a different question for a different day, so. Allie, before we go, is there anything else you want to say about Kaladesh Remastered dropping on Arena tomorrow?
I'm really excited to play a lot tomorrow. I will be streaming a lot of Historic in the next upcoming weeks, so if you want to check that out and see what is up in the format. I'm plugging myself early, I apologize. But
no, you're good. We're in the plug
check
section.
twitch.tv/mythic_Meebo.
Yep. Check Allie out there. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com at Mason E. Clark, and you can find a article with a bunch of deck lists dropping this Thursday on Card Kingdom. I have a lot of deck lists for this set, so if you're looking for something to like, combo off with, we got that, we got Mardu, we got it all. It's pretty exciting. We got a Marvel deck. I don't know. Marvel's messed up. That's all I'm saying. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. We'll see y'all next time for another episode of Constructed Criticism.